Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
This radio show's been on for 13 years. Years ago, I had George Henderson on this show, and in part because I grew up in the Bay Area. I grew up going to San Jose State football games, late 1970s. I'm like 9 or 10 years old. I'm at Spartan Stadium, and I encounter what I think is the most amazing thing in the history of sports stadium experiences. Crazy George. His drum. One man. This is one guy leading an entire stadium. Now, later, as I grew up and went on to cover sports and even work at the Mercury News covering the Niners and the Raiders and the A's and the Giants, I saw Crazy George. I still saw him, and he was with the Earthquakes. He was around the Bay Area. I even saw him on an episode of America's Got Talent once upon a time. So I started this show today basically saying, you know, they need someone to bang the drum for him, and I was using it as a euphemism, and I said, somebody like Crazy George, you know? And you guys looked at me like you don't know who Crazy George is. And so I said, we're getting him on the show, and guess what? George Henderson, a.k.a. Crazy George, joining us now. Where are you right now, Crazy George?
Well, I like you said my name. I'm down in Capitola, California.
Your voice, you sound the same as you did in 1979.
I know, it's always raspy after 45 years at cheerleading for a living.
At what point did the voice go?
I think it's probably 2 years into my professional cheerleading. It's been raspy ever since. I just keep on cheering, keep on having fun. I've been doing about one game a week for the last 45 years, and it's been fun.
Your start, what was the first game that you ever picked up the drum or you ever said, hey, this could be a thing I do?
Well, the first game, a friend brought a drum and a bugle to the game at San Jose State. He hands me the drum because he takes talent to play a bugle. I start pounding the drum, and by the end of the game, fans, all the students at San Jose State started following me. They thought it was funny.
I think it's the greatest thing ever. And yeah, what kind of drum is that, by the way?
I would think it has to be almost indestructible. I hit it hard and I hit it a lot. Well, actually, these days I pace myself a little more.
The idea of a cheerleader, I know that, you know, did you start doing it for free and then it became kind of profession, or how did that evolve?
Yes, I was at San Jose State for 4 years, and while I was a regular student, then I became a cheerleader towards the end of my college career. And then I started teaching. I taught for 4 years, and in that time, I kept cheering for San Jose State, and pro teams started seeing me and using me, but I wasn't getting paid, and I wasn't thinking about it. I was a school teacher, and then one day, I got so busy with people asking me to cheerlead, I started asking for money. And then in 1975, 76, I decided to quit teaching. I taught for 4 years, and that was enough. And I turned professional, and that's when Lamar out of the Kansas City Chiefs hired me. The San Jose Earthquake soccer team hired me. The BC Lions Canadian football hired me. And the Colorado Rockies ice hockey hired me, and I quit teaching, and I've been cheering since 1975, 76 for a living.
The Houston Oilers and the Chiefs, did they get in a bidding war for you, or what happened there?
Oh, that was great. Well, when I first started off, I got my salary up to about $500 a game, which wasn't bad, you know, back in the middle 70s. And I was making like $25,000 a year as a cheerleader and having just a great time. But I had nobody to compare myself with to ask for more money, and they were paying me $500. I was sort of like, they described as icing on the cake. And I was doing a Kansas City team, and along came the Houston Oilers with Bud Grant. He came to a game, saw me cheering for him. Bud Adams saw me cheering. He was the owner of the Houston Oilers. And he came up to me after a game and said, I want to hire you. Well, I was working with the Kansas City Chiefs. But eventually he hired me, and there was a bidding war between the two of them. And it was wild. And that's when my salary increased to like $1,500 a game. And I was doing great and having fun. And it's been that way ever since.
Crazy George. George Henderson is our guest. He's now with the San Jose Earthquakes as a cheerleader. He's written a book, too, called Crazy George, Still Crazy After All These Cheers. The idea that the stadium experience has changed, and I'm fascinated by what your opinion is of, you know, what you see teams doing in stadiums now versus maybe what they were doing in the 80s or the 90s as you were rising as a cheerleader on the scene.
Well, here's the way I look at it. When I started off, I was ultra successful because no stadiums were really loud. And I went in there and I transformed the stadium and I got the fans to focus and be part of the game. And I had so much noise going at these games early on in the middle 70s up to 80, 81. Those years, it was sort of like transformed it. And in fact, the NFL, when I started going in 1982, passed a rule against me because I was making so much noise at the stadium I was working. The other teams couldn't call audibles because they weren't prepared for the noise. And it was so effective. There was so much noise. Now, every stadium, they had rules against noise in the NFL. They never applied them, but they had directly with them. But now every team promotes how great their fans are and how loud they are and how they make a difference. Back then, the only fans that were making a difference were where I was working, and that's why the league passed rules against me and tried to stop the noise.
Oakland A's playing the New York Yankees, October 15th, 1981. What happens inside the stadium?
I love that date. That's when I invented the wave, and that was by the accumulation of all my cheerleading. I got to that game and had already been doing it in like high school rallies. So I knew what I wanted, but the rest of the world did not know. So I organized three or four sections at the Oakland A's New York Yankees playoff game. I started it, but nobody ever saw it before. So it only went about seven sections and died. I started it a second time. It went halfway across around the whole baseball park and stop. I started it a third time, and it continued the whole circumference of the park and got back to where I was standing. All the fans stood up and applauded and went crazy. But I wanted it to keep going, and I kept it going. The fourth time I tried it, it started. The energy picked up. All three decks were doing it. Joe Gargiola was the announcer. He was talking about it, and that's the day I played. That I invented the wave because I have it on video. I got Joe Gargiola testifying. It was the first and best wave he's ever seen since. And that's how it started, 1981. Of course, University of Washington. I hate them claim they invented it 2 weeks later.
They didn't invent it. Does that make you mad that somebody would try to rip that off?
Well, actually, it doesn't make me mad because there's so much controversy early on. It really gave me more publicity. But I just have a great time, and I know I invented it. I have it on video. I did it 2 weeks later. But the controversy is sort of a fun hype thing to do. But anybody that sees the video, listens to my story, they always give me credit for inventing it. That's why I always tell people, especially young kids, if you don't believe it, Google. who invented the wave? And my face comes up on Google.
Crazy George with us. George Henderson, professional cheerleader, the first professional cheerleader, now with the San Jose Earthquakes. Are you 72 years old? Is that right?
I'm 75 years old.
Wow. How does that feel?
Yes, I am. And I just want to say one thing. I've been the only professional cheerleader in the world ever. I'm the only person in the world that does this job, that shows up for multiple teams, gets the fans cheering, gets them involved in the game, and gets paid for it, and makes a living at it. I'm the only one in the world that's ever done it.
Since you went full-time, did you ever do anything else on the side? Or I know you wrote the book, and for people who want to know, it's Crazy George, still crazy after all these cheers. Is there anything else you did on the side, or was this it full-time?
This is it. I do a lot of corporate meetings and things like that, but most of, like 90% of all my income for the last 45 years is cheerleading. That's how I make my living. It's just like all the girls on the sidelines for like the Dallas cheerleaders. You know, they get like $50 a game. You can't live on $50 a game for 10 home games or 50. But they pay me enough that I can make a living just doing the games. And they really don't make a living at it because they have to make all these appearances on the side during the week. I make 99 or 95% of all my money for the games I do. And that's why I call myself the only real professional cheerleader. I make a living at cheering at games.
I think if I was walking down the street and you were walking the other way, I would recognize you. I'd say, Crazy George, that's you. Have you ever been in a situation where you get a celebrity or former pro athlete that looks up as you cross the street and says, "Hey, Crazy George!"
Oh yeah, it's great. I guess I tried to get noticed all my life, so it happens. I did a game up in Edmonton for the Edmonton Oilers with Wayne Gretzky before he moved down to L.A. At the end of the game, I walked in the locker room. He looked at me. He invited me out to dinner. And he said, George, you've got to come out to dinner with us. And then once I got to dinner, he took me to every player and introduced me to every player because they said they'd never heard noise like that at their Coliseum ever. I transformed the fans. I got them radicalized and nuts. And that's what I do. I walk into a stadium, and if it's their 10% level of cheering, I take them to 90%. I do it in one game, unannounced and unknown. That's how I started off. I was never advertised. I just walked into a stadium, had my drum, and I transformed the crowd into maniacs.
Crazy George is with us. I'll vouch for it. I was 9 or 10 years old, Spartan Stadium. Jack Elway's the coach. Steve Clarkson's at quarterback. You know, they had Gil Bird, whose son Jarris went on to play at Oregon in the defensive backfield. And Crazy George would climb the speaker light post and bang the drum. And I thought, this is... And you had that whole stadium rocking.
Oh, I know. I have more fun than anybody. I never thought about making a living at it for the first 5 years I was doing it. I was having fun. I was having fun with the fans. I'm a fan. I get involved. I do what a fan wants to do. They want to support their team. They want to be part of their team. I give them the excuse. And that's why I'd walk into a game like the first game I did with Kansas City Chiefs. There was 70,000 people there. It was preseason. They lose to the Pittsburgh Steelers 45-0. At the end of the game, Lamar Hunt came up to me and said it's the loudest he'd ever heard his stadium. Think about this. It was a loss of 45-0. It was preseason. And from that one game, Lamar Hunt hired me for the whole season. And I transformed their fans because I made them radicalize. We focused. cashed in on the quarterbacks. We buried them. And that's why all these NFL teams, for over the years, I worked for about five NFL teams. They all hired me because I cheered against them, and they couldn't believe what I did. And then they said, I want there at our place. I want the same thing George did to us. I want George to do it for us. And so I kept getting team after hiring me, and they only hired me after they saw me cheering against them, and they hated it at the time, but they loved what I did when I got to their place.
You're doing corporate events now. You're doing the earthquakes now. You're 75 years old. How long do you want to do this?
I want to do it forever. And luckily, I have a fallback job now. I'm also, when I'm not cheerleading, because I only work 3 hours a week, I'm a professional male model. Well, that's the only problem with that job. I've been waiting 45 years and nobody's ever paid me to do it yet. I'm waiting for the photo op. But no, nobody hires me for that. They just keep hiring me to cheerlead.
Keep doing what you do, George. I appreciate you, man. We'll have you back on.
Okay, I'd love to be back on. This is a great show. And don't forget my book, Still Crazy After All These Cheers.
George Henderson, Crazy George, 75 years old. There is a certain level of I don't give a bleep that you have to walk into a stadium and do what he does. He's not working with the PA system. He's not working with the music. He's got a drum, and he's got himself. And I can remember being in the stadium as a kid and going, this entire stadium is doing what he wants everyone to do. He'd get you yelling chants. He'd get you, you know. And I think now, look at what the Timbers have done with the Timbers Army and stuff. It's very similar to that. Except it's one guy who was leading it all those years. I can't believe his voice, though. There has to be a medical condition. Can you believe his voice?
I tried to tell you.
That's what he sounded like, though. I thought it was just because he was yelling. It's permanent. You know when you're a kid and your parents say, don't do that with your face, it'll stick? He did that with his voice. It stuck. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. I pay attention to what's going on in high school sports in the area. I was interested when Keenan Lowe left Park Rose High School to become the head coach at West Lynn. Wish him the best. Big day at Jefferson High School today. Today, Jefferson announced their new head football coach, Houston Lillard. He was the offensive coordinator there last year. By the way, has a younger brother who is a pretty good basketball player. But Houston Lillard being introduced as the new head coach at Jefferson. I don't think that that's public yet, but they will play Lake Oswego heads to Jefferson on September 4th. That's the opener for both those teams. Congratulations to Jefferson. Congratulations to Houston. And I am a big fan of people who buy into kids, especially if you were talking about some of the historically struggling schools that have struggled to field football or basketball teams. Whenever I see somebody buying in, like I saw Neil Lomax make a real effort to coach in the PIL, and I saw Keenan Lowe go to Park Rose where they hadn't won a conference game in like a decade, and he gets him into the playoffs and wins a playoff game. And now I see Houston Lillard at Jefferson. Big day at Jefferson. The Democrats got their coach. I like that. I always talk about youth sports, and I'll pivot to high school sports. I think high school sports are endangered right now in a way that they haven't been ever endangered. The club scene is cannibalizing them. Of course, resources on campuses at high schools are threatening the co-curricular activities in a way that they've never been threatened before. But I think ultimately, if you are a high school, part of a person's well-grounded education comes with being on the school team and the teams at the school. So I'm always grateful for the teachers on campuses across the state who, on the side, for 50 cents an hour, essentially, decide to invest their time in helping kids grow and play a sport. And I'm also grateful to the coaches who come in from off campus and say, hey, I want to be part of this. I'm not a teacher at the school, but I can help. So for those of you out there that coach a high school team or are assistant coach on a high school team at any level, bless you for the work that you do. I think it's pretty amazing. I don't know what sports you played in high school. Either you guys play high school sports. I did it all.
Yeah, I played baseball and basketball.
You did. What do you remember of your high school coaches?
A very mixed bag, but the ones that mattered really, really mattered.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, just it went beyond, you know, playing as a team. It was actual life lessons, the value of work and preparation, meeting opportunity, and all those things that I still carry with me.
I remember this of my high school experience. When I arrive as a freshman in high school, I'm playing three sports, and generally the freshman or the JV coach was like a teacher on campus who had been drafted. Like the math teacher was coaching the basketball team. He kind of knew what he was doing, but didn't really, as I look back on it. Our baseball coach was from off campus. He must have been like 25. He was just, you know, barely starting out. But as I got along in school, what I realized was that a lot of these people were just investing in kids. Did you play sports in high school?
I did show choir. So it,
what's,
I mean,
show
it was
choir?
Like kind of dance.
What is
sort
that?
Of.
What's show choir?
It's really popular like down south and more east, but it's basically like dancing and singing at the same time.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Dancing, sing, kind of like Glee.
Yeah, basically.
Kind of like that's what everybody's doing now on TV.
I mean, not really anymore.
Not anymore, but
for,
you know,
the time.
I guess a few years ago. So what would you do? Would you do like a production of Annie or something? Or what was it?
Usually it was a mixture of different like older songs, like a lot of swing and some like partner dancing and stuff like that. Then some like more contemporary stuff. But it was always like a mixture.
Interesting. Nick Cody, former Oregon offensive lineman, has called into the show. He works and lives in Seattle. You were calling in about Taylors. What do you remember about Taylors?
Well, I'll get to that first. While we're on the subject, I got to give a great shout out to a great Hawkinson program right there in Southwest Washington. Helped bring me up, including the defensive coordinator was our track coach, and still helped me stick around in the weight room. I wasn't on the track team, but he put up with me when I was hanging out with the track team, just trying to use the weight room. So big shout out. Coach Steele is still there to this day, helped open the program. And I started there in 2004, and, you know, they are so supportive of three-sport athletes coming to their program because, you know, there's a lot of football coaches out there, you know, especially locally, smaller programs, that really want those kids year-round kind of investing in football. And while it's important to get that physical conditioning, get in the weight room, and year-round kind of prep for football that way, you can do it by playing multiple sports. And a big thing about Hawkinson is they've always supported it, and that's why I think the programs are so successful right now.
And I love that it's always about people, too, isn't it? Like, there's the people who invest in kids in high school sports and the coaches who have been there for years and create culture. And, you know, you go back to your old school and you see your same old coaches years later who are still there working with kids, getting it done.
Well, and, you know, not just years, John, but decades. That's the kind of guy Coach Steele is. I mean, I'm telling you, this guy was in the Vancouver area before Hawkinson was ever even built. You know, he had worked at Fort Vancouver. He had worked at Hudson's Bay. He'd coached tons and tons of kids. And before the program was even opening, he was He was around the 8th grade and 7th grade teams in Clark County youth football, and he was already laying the groundwork for the program that's there today when it wasn't even in existence. So I think that kind of, devotion to youth development, seeing it in coaches is rare, but the coaches you see it from and get paid again and again and again, regardless of the success their programs have, I think that's important, and I think a lot of athletic directors need to take that into account more.
Now let's talk about Taylor's. As a college football player, playing at a time in which Oregon was very good in football, playing for the national championship, Taylor's became a hot spot, not just for students, but outsiders.
Absolutely. Even when I was a recruit, you saw that kind of rise, that 2007 season where Taylor's, even though I wasn't 21, it had that reputation of, hey, everybody, when the night's over, everybody's wrapped up with the game or, your pregame party, everybody go to Taylor's because that's where everybody's going to be at. And while I was there at Oregon, it began to get a pretty negative reputation, particularly within the team. And by the time I graduated, it was one of the places that had a reputation of some place that, you didn't go around, not just because the coaches didn't want you there or, you might possibly get in trouble, but also just because peer pressure. I mean, if you saw another guy kind of planning to go in Taylor's, you kind of gave him a ribbon like, man, are you really planning to go there? And back then it wasn't even that bad. Unfortunately, I decided to check out Taylor's, I think 2 years ago, back when game day was in town for that overtime game with Stanford. And I mean, of all the obscene things, including, some of the fans at the end, one of the worst was, taking a friend to Taylor's the night before when everybody was camped out for game day. And it was embarrassing, man. I mean, it had changed a bunch. It was packed. They were serving these new buckets you were talking about that are a ripoff I've seen from other restaurants like the Rock, Woodfire Pizza and that stuff. And I mean, it's basically just a souped up, Long Island or AMF in a cup with a little bit of Red Bull on the side. It's all a mixture for problems if you can't, properly be able to provide security for the number of people you have packed in that place. I think that was the biggest thing. I mean, they had just grown beyond that small little space and, continuing to see money and people coming in and it being a popular place. You can see where once they just started pushing things under the rug, it just became a symptom,
Nick Cody, I appreciate you calling in and giving a shout-out to your old...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.